are swift, rocks are ancient, mountains are high, oceans gray, winds are restless, trees are patient, you my child are away.
Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The inner game is the relationship we have to our authentic purpose and contribution in life. It's about the ways that we grow personally and spiritually on the inside that affects everything on the outside of our lives. The quality of our inner game is becoming increasingly important because we now know that our quantum world shifts to reflect whatever is inside us. Each of our contributions is critical to the quality of what is possible for us all on the planet. These are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives, and an opportunity to hear about how these people take on their spiritual and personal growth, and how that strengthens the contribution they are making to the world. Our guest today is Susan Brady, who in 2011 founded the Two Forks Club, a nonprofit lending club that makes 0% loans available to farmers and food enterprises in the area. Thanks so much for joining me today, Susan.
Thank you.
We'll get to your involvement in the local food movement in just a minute, but I wanted to start with your spiritual life. As a child, you shared with me that you were raised in a Baptist church in North Carolina and that you were afraid of God, but that you had a deep love for Jesus Christ. How would you describe your spiritual life now, you know, and the role that it plays in your life?
Well, I feel that my spiritual life now is actually my life.
Yeah.
It really is my focus. And I don't know if that has to do with the age that I find myself. Or
do you want to proudly share that with people?
75 this past month. Yes. And I'm more and more excited about my age, actually. Yeah. I find with that I'm more focused in my spiritual life. And it isn't as narrow as it was as a child, meaning being raised in a very strict Baptist religious church and community and family. And at a very young age, I pushed off from that and started searching for myself. And based on just my life experiences, I don't know how to describe this drive or this passion or this desire that I felt from a very young age that I still feel, which is questioning and searching. I feel far more at ease now. I am very comfortable with the belief that what we see as our ordinary reality is not very much of what really exists. That's my cosmology, at least. So, I call on all the relationships and beings and entities and angels, whatever words you might put to the other energies that do participate with us. Mm-hmm. And I acknowledge that much more than I ever have and call on that much more than I ever have.
After all that seeking, what do you feel like you found?
Myself. Myself being a part of what I think creates our world, the energy, the vibration that creates everything. And I feel, personally, I feel that all sentient beings, and that for me includes nature, are part of that, that we are always a part of it and always will be a part of it. And that is the place where I feel that I found more solace, more happiness and satisfaction. Part of my seeking was in my educational journey, which was in because of the family I was raised in. And most of us raised in the 1940s and 50s were probably came from dysfunctional families. I mean, it was just the flavor of the time.
Right.
Our parents did the best they could, and I still feel that. However, they didn't have the resources that we have now as humans. I mean, we have enormous resources at our fingertips in terms of parenting and anything else.
But yeah, we understand a lot more about the ways that we get wounded,
yes,
psychically,
yes,
and physically.
Yes. So for me, coming from what I consider a dysfunctional family, meaning parents, I don't know. There again, there I didn't lose the spark of life or spirituality in me, mm-hmm. and I was a fighter in terms of, okay, this doesn't feel right, so I'm going to figure this out. And it led me into a path of psychology mm-hmm. that felt like the most natural place to go to
trying
find
to figure
yeah.
those things
yeah,
out,
find
right.
answers. Yeah, mm-hmm. and I did. It gave me. I was thinking about this today that part of what I feel is so important is that we help each other, help ourselves, help each other. Create spiritual toolboxes is how I would say mm-hmm. it. And I have a very, what's the word, lots of tools in my spiritual toolbox, mm-hmm. not just a few.
Yeah.
You know, I find myself pulling things out from literature, pulling things out from psychology, from the church, even the Baptist church, even mm-hmm. the Bible. And when it just comes up, it comes up as, oh, that helps. That helps me understand. I don't know that I answered what the original question was.
Well, you have been an evolutionary catalyst for a long time, and that yeah. did show up in things like creating encounter groups to address drug use that
yes.
would involve teachers and parents and healthcare representatives and students. That was a pretty new way of
yeah, it
coming
was in the
70s.
That,
right.
Yeah, it was in the early 70s.
And then around
North Carolina.
Right. And then, as you mentioned, in progressive education, you created... helped her create a school based on the Summerhill
yes.
model, which honors and teaches self-governance. And
true.
What were the pieces of those activities that were really valuable to you, that had values attached that are still really dear to you today?
I think some of the things we're dealing with, quite frankly, today in our world, equality as opposed to inequality, justice.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly the drug action of Wake County being where Raleigh is in North Carolina. I met, because of my upbringing, I had a very narrow, pretty narrow upbringing in terms of people I knew or people my parents knew. But when I was involved in this organization, I was their educational coordinator and put together these encounter groups. I met every aspect of the society there, the culture, the kids, the police, the teachers, healthcare, social workers, the whole gamut of individuals and from all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So I think that was, for me personally, a strong lesson in humanity and that we're all very much the same. We all are dealing with very much the same issues.
And did you find right away that you would get better results when you had people from all those diverse perspectives coming together to look at an issue?
Absolutely. And I feel like it not only addressed the stated problem, quote unquote, drug use and abuse, it also helped people individually expand and evolve and grow.
Just listening to each other?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Or hearing other people's viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even parents and kids. I mean, as I think I shared with you, one of our classic things was in the 70s, it was the uppers and downers that we were dealing with mostly. There was heroin and some other things involved, but mostly the drugs of choice for the teenagers were uppers and downers.
What their parents were using, right?
Yes. And we would point out that was the, you know, there were prescription in there they'd find in their medicine cabinets,
yeah.
but in reality, they were using them, the kids were using them illegally.
Yeah.
But what we would share is, okay, mom and dad, you know, you're drinking a couple of beers at night or a couple of glasses of wine, and when you wake up in the morning, you can't even talk to anyone until you have your first two cups of coffee. Well, what are you doing? You're doing uppers and downers.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of it was all really fun in a very important way.
Mm. What yeah. were some of the lessons that you learned about community through the Summerhill model? That just fascinates me.
Yeah.
And man, we need more ways to learn how to be part of a community and learn how to practice true democracy.
Yes. Well, again, it was a small group of people. It probably was six families, seven families at the most that came together, and again, from very different backgrounds and different socioeconomic backgrounds, racial backgrounds, everything. And we as the founders of the school and the parents in the school were the rule makers as such, or policy makers, because mm-hmm. there were very few rules.
Right.
What am I saying? Policy makers, and having to be together in a group and make decisions and make certain everyone had a voice. And just because one family might have owned the land or the building, it's the same with the Two Forks Club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was still one vote, one person. It
right.
wasn't, you know, you didn't, because you were older or
mm-hmm.
Had more wealth or had more education, you didn't mean
equal playing field.
Yeah, yes, very much
yep.
so. I was not familiar with that form of education until I was in graduate school in psychology, and I was reading and studying about physical space and how it affects kids in mm-hmm. schools. And so I did a lot of research on different types of education models and came across the Summerhill, obviously, and it just fascinated me. I wasn't brought up in an educational system like that. So,
right.
And I didn't learn about it until my two younger children. I have three, I say children, they're in their 50s. I didn't have the advantage with the two older children to put them in that form of education, but my younger son, my younger child and youngest son, I guess.
What do you think were the biggest impacts on him? What are the differences that you see in how he operates?
Well, he has an innate understanding of learning, and particularly in the science and math world, where he learned science and math through participation with nature.
Yeah,
and not so much with textbooks
mm-hmm.
at all. And I'm not even sure if you ask him, he'd be aware of that because he was so young. I mean, he was in this school as a 5 and 6 year old. So he never knew anything different in learning until he was in the 8th grade. I mean, his first test as such, he took in the 8th grade. And everything came from within him. And I see he is a teacher in the Valley,
mm-hmm.
and the Valley's very lucky. He's lucky to be in the Valley, and the Valley's very lucky to have him. And I feel like he, from what I'm told and by parents and students that have had him, that his way of teaching is so off the chart compared to most people's
mm-hmm.
technique. I mean, he's a physics teacher. And one of the things he used to do, I'm not sure he can do it anymore because of how the world's changed
right.
in the school system, but he used to take his senior class for their exam, part of it, to Eledge's in Denver. And he would test the physics, the laws of physics through the rides. And as I said, it was only part of it, but that to me gives me an indication of more of the type of teacher he is.
More experiential.
Yeah. And I know that with his own children, when they were very, very young, when he would address them, he would get to their eye level. He would never expect them to put their head up and look at him. And he was taught that way. I'm pretty certain that he learned that from mm-hmm. the schools he was in,
right.
where the adults dropped mm-hmm. themselves to his eye level mm-hmm. and engaged in front of him. That's sort of a minor thing, but I think it's
an
a major
honoring practice.
Yeah, it is
though.
An honoring.
It's just an honoring
yeah.
thing. Well, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is Susan Brady, and I would love to ask you, it's clear that the value of community and learning to be part of community are very central for you, as well as these values of social justice and equality and connection to nature. How have those shown up in your involvement in the local food movement?
Well, they showed up with the club, with the Two Forks Club.
How'd that start?
Well, I guess, first off, as a child, I was interested in gardening and flowers and vegetables and all of this, and have always had my own personal garden, but it wasn't my main focus by any stretch. It goes back to Brooke Levan at Sustainable Settings, one of our wonderful contributors to the local food movement, actually the local soil movement.
Right.
He had read the book Slow Money by Woody Tash and had, I think, actually gone to a couple of Woody's workshops or presentations and decided he wanted to bring him here at the Harvest Fest that Sustainable Settings has at this time of year, every year. And he did, and I attended, and I was just really, it was like somebody lit a fire in me when I heard him speak, and I read the book first before I went. It just seemed to strike a chord in terms of, you know, we need to bring some of our investment dollars back down to earth.
And when you say the book, you mean Slow Money?
Slow Money.
Yep.
Yeah.
By Woody Tash.
Yes, he has since written a second book, but
right.
this was the seminal book of his. And at that gathering that year, and I think that was 2011, it might have been 2010, a large part of our community showed up and signed on for that they were interested in coming together on a regular basis and pursuing some type of investment club, because that's what had followed Woody. He didn't set out to have investment clubs established, but people all over the country and now the world have, once they hear him speak and understand what this is about, they want to create something in their own local
Why
area.
Do you think it's caught on? Why now? What are people getting aware of, and how is it touching them?
I feel like, based on the climate of our government, meaning our federal government, even our state governments, more and more people are realizing that they have the power to change their own world by being more focused locally, that they really have an opportunity locally to make a difference. And obviously, if you make a difference locally, it's like the ripple effect. It comes out and you will make a difference otherwise. So I think it's that. And I think knowing that we're very fragile with our food system in this valley and the North Fork Valley, meaning we're very dependent on trucking, basically I-70.
Yeah.
And we know what happens to I-70 pretty often. It shuts down. And when that happens, the grocery stores in our valley, the shelves start emptying. So I think that's part of it. And then the health people are more conscious about how eating well, meaning healthy, eating food that has been grown in healthy soil, really contributes to the well-being of the body. Well, not just the body, but certainly the body.
And it also seems like there's something really satisfying about investing in a person that you know and in their efforts, especially when they're efforts that you believe in so deeply.
Absolutely.
That must be a lot of fun get to see.
Well, yes, I've gotten to know the local farming community, and to me, they're my community, meaning those are the people I like to hang out with.
Right.
And I think we should mention the movie, How We Grow, that Haley Thompson and Tom, and I'm going to miss
Zuccarino.
Yeah, not going to mispronounce it because you pronounced it for me. The movie that they developed, created, and it was shown here last summer. I'm hoping some of you listening had the opportunity to see it. And I think you will again, because they're doing their best to get it out.
It's hard
there.
Not to fall in love with those farmers.
Oh, wow. This movie is spectacular.
And just the concept of local food.
Yes.
That knits us together, creates a local economy, does so much. It's really at the center of what I've been able to see is building communities that will be resilient and reflective of where we want to be in the future.
I agree. And it's a tight community. Not that people can't get into it, but I mean, a very caring, that's what I mean by tight. People are genuinely caring for each other and concerned for each other. I know that at one of our Two Forks meetings, Casey Piscarol of Wild Mountain Seeds was one of our early on recipients of a loan, and he was talking about being able to pay it back and what it had afforded him. And Brooke Levan was in the room, and he said, "So Casey, did you pay yourself this year?" And Casey sort of looked up and he said, "No." And then, you know, very quickly, our club was like, "Well, you need to ask for more money then. If you're not paying yourself, we don't want to see you burn out. We want this to be sustainable. We really want to support you, and we want to support you in taking care of yourself as well as taking care of us.
Right. And has that shifted?
Yes.
Good news.
Definitely.
Well, I always like to ask people, what's a skill or a behavior that you've developed or are developing that's making a difference in your work and community?
Mediating, I find. They're like most communities, you have issues. You'll have people who, for whatever reasons, have conflict, or there will be a conflict. And I find that
you get a few people in the room and you can count on it, right?
Yes. And I find that I have an ability that I really love to sort of take myself out of the immediate issue and raise myself, don't want to say above, but out of it and see the bigger picture. And again, the psychology skills, the communication skills, I actually used to teach values clarification and communication skills. I can very quickly see how to help people navigate through whatever is taking place with them.
What's hard for you?
With all of that said, I'm also very much a hermit. I don't know how you can.
So it takes some effort for you to get out and network.
I do
love people.
Yeah, I could. I could be very satisfied reading novels or watching tennis or golf on television or cooking. I love to cook.
Yeah.
And be with my grandkids that live in the valley. And I can get very insulated if I let myself.
I sense you have been at times shut down by a sense of humility on the positive end or lack of confidence maybe on the negative end. And I feel like for a lot of women, that keeps us from drawing attention to ourselves. We're told we're too big for our britches or we're know-it-all. And how do you get past that?
I hate to say it's taken a lot of years, but it has. I think inner work and being willing to face things that I might, situations, people, energies that I might not want to face, but know that if I do and I work on my inner being, that it comes out for the better and I come out stronger. And I think a lot of the climate, again, in our society right now, the Me Too, a lot of the things that women are coming together behind and are standing up for each other, and there's more to read, there's more to find out about how, you know, you're not a lone ranger out there. You're not the only one that had this happen to them. In fact, most women have had the things that we're hearing about happen to them, even if it's a glance or a put down or a whatever.
So it's getting easier to trust our voices.
Yes. And to know that it's important to speak out.
So you are 75 and you've started this beautiful venture, which you're very active in. What's next for Susan Brady?
I should ask you to tell me that.
We know it'll be something amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here today. And thanks all of you for listening today. If you have a question for Susan or me, please join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. And we can continue the conversation there. And until next time, celebrate soil.
Yes.
Waves are crashing, rivers churning, planets twirling, stars ablaze, storms are raging, atoms whirling, and you, my child, are awake to perceive these. Blackbird's wings to tell a story and dance and sing. All the splendors of creation are very happy that you came, because they needed someone to see them. And you, my child, are away. Dance and sing.